Good morning. It is 10:05 a.m. We are here today, December 11, 2018, in the OPA hearing room, Suite 907 of the DNA building in Hagatnya, Guam, for the status hearing of OPAPA 16-003 and 16-005, TLK Marketing versus the Guam Visitors Bureau. Presiding over the hearing today is Hearing Officer Peter C. Perez. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability are Jarek Hernandez and Clarissa Roque. Will appellant TLK please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning, Joyce Tang and Josh Ballas, civil attorney for TLK, and we do not have a representative present. Thank
Good
you.
Morning. Thank you.
Good morning.
Will purchasing agency GBB please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Yes, good morning. My name is Thomas Fisher. I'm an attorney representing the Guam Visitors Bureau in this matter. Seated to my left is Ms.
Lisa Linick,
who is the institutional representative.
Thank you. You may proceed.
Good morning. On November 30th, 2018, TLK Marketing filed an objection to appointment of Peter C. Perez as presiding auditor. Procedurally, Ms. Tang, where do you think we go from here?
Well, if I may, I really think the problem is the process. And certainly a year ago when this was on appeal, no one envisioned Ms. Brooks leaving the OPA and then Mr. Cruz being voted in as the next OPA and the ensuing conflict. So clearly this wasn't even there. And then we have, then you've now ascended to the position of the final decision maker as opposed to a hearing officer. So these were certainly nothing that I think any of us envisioned. And I certainly think that the process, the OPA Act, did not contemplate any of these things. And there's this chasm, I think, of that creates problems for all of us. And I raise this because I think of two reasons. First, I know that in the past, it has been the hearing officer who has defended the position of the OPA and in any Superior Court appeals, but most, and I can't speak for most of those cases or all of those cases, but I presume that most of them, they would go back as the hearing officer with Ms. Brooks as the public auditor being the final ultimate decision maker. And these are different facts. We have not found any regulations or laws that would address these facts. And the second issue is the potential conflicts. I think that what happened, because of these set of facts, the conflicts are different. Because the initial conflict check that was done at the beginning of the OPA appeal, we have no problem with, we didn't have any issue with you sitting as the hearing officer. But because now you're the final decision maker, and I think and because of the ensuing appeals and whatnot, it creates a different level of conflicts, given that we have other cases, and I don't need to get into those. So I think those are issues that, in my view, are probably issues of first impression for this public auditor's office, and I raise them because I think these are important issues, because I think the integrity of the public auditor's office has to be maintained, and it should be, and will be, and you know, and Mr. Walsh and I have talked about it, and we looked at the rules, it doesn't say what you do next, because it only says, so my thought was, appoint another hearing officer who's not conflicted, and finish off the remand. I mean, that seems to me the simplest solution in terms, and how you get to that, whether it's by recusal because of the cases that are conflicts, or however you want to do that, that is your decision. But I think that the fastest and most expedient way is to just, you know, find another hearing officer. And I understand there are a few of them that are not conflicted. And we just finish off the remand and deal with the issues, and there'll be a final decision after briefs, if you will, are submitted on the remand, a short brief. And you have the remand decision. We file our brief position statements, if you will, and unless there's another process in place. And a decision is issued by the public auditor, and the sitting, the new, I guess you would call it the replacement public auditor in this case, or final hearing officer. What do you call it?
Presiding.
presiding officer, excuse me. So that, I think that's our thought. I realize this is a little bit awkward and a little strange, but it, the facts are weird and nobody expected it, but they are what they are. So.
Do you think I should file a response?
We've looked at different things. We looked at judicial canon, and after we filed this, we realized there's also a model code of judicial conduct for state administrative law judges. Mm-hmm. So, and they talk about the conflicts 2.12, and in particular 2.185, which talks about, you know, a lawyer who has served in a matter in controversy shall not be an ALJ. I think there is no process set out for this, and I guess it depends on how, whether one, you agree that there's a conflict, a recusal requires no response. Mm-hmm. But if you feel that your response is warranted, I think that is your discretion. I can't speak to the process because there's none in place.
I'm thinking that it would be, I would file something saying I agree.
Okay.
Or I would file something saying I don't agree, and I guess that would be appealed.
Okay. Well,
I
think there's two issues. There's one of recusal. So if you find there's a conflict, so it doesn't matter whether you agree or disagree, it just prolongs the process. If the issue of conflict, because now you're the final decision maker,
right,
as opposed to hearing officer in our pending cases, the firms, right? Mm-hmm. Then that's one issue, because we do believe that a second round of conflict should go out in the event that you ascend to, because a hearing officer becomes now the presiding officer and final decision maker, okay? So, and that did not happen, but because there is no process in place. It's not because they were remiss or anything. But I think had that happened, and that would have been caught at that stage, right? Mm-hmm. And parties could have said, yeah, we agree, we don't agree, and then it gets kind of flushed out, however you deal with your the OPA's office deals with these conflicts internally. That's one way to deal with it. In terms of this issue, a second issue of whether presiding officer you're subject to ALJ or rules of judicial canon, acting as officer, where, you know, I understand and that, you know, positions have been taken regarding, for instance, discovery. As the representative of OPA, you have told the court you objected to discovery, our request for discovery, so you've been an advocate, as opposed to just taking no position and appearing as a neutral party, which is, I think, different. And I think that those are difficult issues, because should we be creating new laws, or should we let this is an expedited process. If you are conflicted, I think that that's should be resolved independently of the other issue of what's this process in place now to deal with these objections and whatnot. And I think that issue both can be resolved, but I think what has to be resolved is the issue of conflict, regardless of whether these rules of judicial canon and whether you're representing the OPA's office in the Superior Court appeal necessarily creates a conflict. That's a separate issue. The first issue has to be the conflict issue, I think, as a threshold issue must be resolved.
As the appointed, I guess, presiding officer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's just, it makes sense. I mean, any judge, you know, I mean, when you call judges or administrative law judges, if you have a conflict, the first issue is conflict. Do you have a conflict? And then you look at maybe all the more different issues. But if the issue of conflict resolves itself, then and it can't be just not addressed and
right.
Go on. That I think that would be the process. In terms of the other issue, our position is it doesn't need to be, because we think on the conflict issue is serious enough that, you know, and then of course nobody envisioned you being in this position or the circumstances led us here today. And maybe what needs to happen is a second round of conflict checks whenever you come back from appeal, so that if there's a change in position of the hearing officer who now becomes the, you know, final, the presiding official, then I think that warrants a second round. And those are, as I said, you know, really odd facts and, you know, that we have before us.
I'm just thinking that there needs to be some sort of response to what you've put forth, whether it be yes, a recusal, or, I mean, there just has to be something. So there's some.
There should be a response in terms of, if you say, look, I, you know, on whether I file this or not, I think the issue of conflict would, if I just walked in today and said, by the way, let me raise this,
right,
then I think it would be before you. And it would be addressed whether, you know, verbally on the record or in the writing. So I totally agree with you on the conflict issue. Mm-hmm. The second issue, the objection, I think that's a, you know, that's, you. If you don't need to reach it today, that's up to you. If you feel that you need to reach it, and you know, that's a different issue. I mean, I think it becomes moot.
Right.
Frankly,
I mean,
it becomes moot.
If I agree with you, then that's basically agreeing with your motion.
You can agree on different grounds. I think you can simply say that there is a conflict because you're now, as I just discussed, it grows and the issues raised in this are mooted. Or if you do have a position on it, you put your position. I guess that's your discretion. You know, I can't tell you what it's not my place to tell you. But I really think it does get mooted. The second issue of the greater issue gets mooted. Is it an issue that has to be addressed here? I don't think
so. We may not get there.
If you don't need to get there, but you can, if you're mooted, if it's mooted, it's mooted. And there's a record of the issue being there. And, you know, perhaps it's an issue for another day.
Right. I mean, it was important to me to hear where you thought we would go
with
this.
Yeah. You know, we struggled with this.
I just don't think it's that you, but.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Because we struggled with this. I mean, to tell the truth, I mean, this was. It didn't feel right. What's the law on this? And we really struggled with it. And you know, and I think that this is not going to be a one-off deal. And so we decided, look, let's just put it out there and see if, you know, maybe there's going to be new processes in place and whatnot. But it's as good place as any to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's an important issue that needs to be dealt with specifically in this case.
Yeah.
And the way I take your motion really. Although you insert other language, is really to the appointment of me as the presiding auditor.
Right.
Because I've already been appointed as hearing officer. So if I were to recuse myself as presiding officer, then the way I see it now is I would resume as hearing officer. And if you had an objection to that, then you would file that objection at the appropriate time. But
If there a new presiding officer is appointed who is a hearing officer, why wouldn't that be? I mean, if you're conflicted, you're conflicted. I'm not sure you can parse that.
Well, I guess the distinction is if you're the presiding auditor, then you're the decision maker, versus if you are the already appointed hearing officer and the practice has been that all of the appointed hearing officers participate in the appeals that are filed by parties at the superior court level. That's been the practice. And
right. But maybe they need to have another hearing officer do that so they don't cross, you know.
It's an option. I'm just thinking that maybe that's not ripe right now.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think that's a policy issue for OPA, whether
right.
they want to switch out the hearing officer for Superior Court Appeals.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's an issue for any of us to decide. I mean, you know, I think it's a policy issue.
I guess I guess my point is that
the question is conflict, really. How deep is the conflict?
Well,
does the conflict just run on one level or all levels? And you know, I think you raise a good question. I actually haven't thought about it. I thought, you know, you kind of tend to think that when an attorney and I think that makes it difficult because Guam is so small. You don't have people just doing ALJ work,
mm-hmm.
aside from David Mayer and everybody, you know, to support and practice. And I think that's the difficulty with Guam. But, you know, there are people who do that, like David Mayer and, to some extent, Fred Horecki. But I think that a conflict, I think the issue that needs to be examined is whether a conflict is, you know, how
far
the conflict goes. Yeah. And I haven't really looked at that issue, so I didn't think about that, but I think you've raised a good issue.
Can I add just one thing briefly? If for instance, the presiding officer in this particular matter accepts the idea that there's a conflict. If the question is that presiding officer then have a conflict when they become the hearing officer? I'm not quite sure we even have to get to that question, because if the replacement presiding officer is a presiding officer like you, who's also got the legal reins, I'm not sure that that next proceeding needs a hearing officer and a presiding officer. I think so that, you know, just in terms of what the potential pathways forward are, what are the issues you never have to get to? I don't think we even have to get to that issue if we don't want to, if the next presiding officer is somebody who also has the legal background to do the dual role that you're doing currently, which is hearing officer and presiding officer. That's the only thing I'd add to that.
That would be, I would view that as, I guess, the decision of whoever the existing public auditor would be after this decision is made. I'm just trying to handle this cleanly and approach the issue really that I see as raised in the motion, which
I
view as the presiding officer, because I've already been appointed as hearing officer. And I understand what you're saying, maybe another round of conflicts checks needs to be raised, but I think also the parties have the ability, if a new issue arises, to raise an issue without having to put out another round of, well, you wouldn't put out another round of conflicts checks on, other than with respect to having a hearing officer ascend to a new position. But anyway, so my thought is that is to address the appointment of me as presiding auditor, and then if I were to determine that I should be recused, that you would then, that I would resume the role of hearing officer if the public auditor saw fit, and if not, maybe as Mr. Walsh indicated, maybe it would be one person just handling the remand. But I just don't think maybe it's right yet.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't want to weigh in something that, I mean, I think those are good questions. I'm not sure it's right, but, and I think Mr. Walsh raises a good point, and I think if you have a lawyer who is also a presiding officer, then, you know, if do you need two lawyers? And my understanding is Ms. Brooks also, you know, relied heavily on the hearing officers for a lot of the legal support. And, you know, so that's, I guess, the call of the sitting public auditor. But I think those are issues probably not right for the moment.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Fisher, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, a few things. I'd ask you to consider whether or not when you made your filing in the Superior Court, you were acting as a lawyer for the Office of Public Accountability, or you were acting as the Office of Public Accountability. There's a difference. You may not have been an advocate at all. The second thing is, if you were not objectionable as a hearing officer, but you are objectionable as the, what's the phrase that's used?
Presiding auditor.
The presiding auditor. But you are objectionable as the presiding auditor, then you are being attacked, for want of a better verb, because of your office, which is, of course, within the OPA. You're not being attacked personally. Nobody's alleging that you have, you know, you work for TLK or you work for GBB or anything like that. So I don't see how you can logically separate a conflict that you may or may not have as the presiding auditor from the office itself. I just don't see how it's possible to do so. So if you were to say, yeah, you're right, I do have a conflict, then what next? Then that means the OPA has a conflict, and then where do we go? I just don't think a conflict exists. Now, when you make a decision on Ms. Tang's motion, I'd like you to keep that in mind. You know, we'd like to get on with this. I mean, there's some certain procedural facts that you need to know. Perhaps you don't need to know them today, but you will need to know, and I think it's going to short-circuit this entire process. But nevertheless, they've raised the issue of conflict. Let's address it. I don't think you have one. If you do have one, then the OPA's out.
So what do you think? Where do you see procedurally this going?
Procedurally, I think you need to make an initial decision. If you think, if you want to use the, you know, the Superior Court rules as a model for this, you may turn it over, I suppose, to someone else to make the decision on whether or not you have a conflict.
That would be after a determination by me. For example, if I say I have no conflict, then I would turn it over, right?
Yeah, I forgot how the rules work over there. It's probably something like that. I think it's kind of a two-step boogie there. But I think if you want to use use that as a procedural model, I don't have an objection to that. But then again, you know, it's kind of weird. I guess it's the same thing happens in the Superior Court. You'd be the one who would be picking the person to decide whether or not you actually have a conflict. Certain things, I suppose, process-wise, are unavoidable. But I guess I don't have too much more to add on that. I guess let's get to the merit of Ms. Tang's objection. Process-wise?
Well, I'm just, I don't want to argue. I don't want to have argument on the motion right now. I'm just, I may just recuse. I don't know. I just wanted to hear from the parties where they think procedurally, this procedurally should be handled.
Well, I think it has to be a close. If let's just assume that you decide to recuse yourself because there's an appearance or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think that's. I guess Joyce or Ms. Tang and I probably agree on this point. I mean, that's something. The basis for the recusal would have to be well thought out. Otherwise, you could potentially destroy the jurisdiction of the OPA in this case. I don't know.
It depends on the grounds.
It depends on the grounds, yeah. I mean, because if you're saying, you're right, I'm out because I'm the OPA, then right? Mm-hmm. So
I think those are frivolous arguments, frankly. Three points. First of all, there's no office of the OPA. You don't represent an office. Hearing officer has certain obligations, rights under the Act, and the OPA himself or herself or the presiding officer has the ultimate powers. Okay, so there is no office. This fiction here.
What do you mean there's no office? Where are we seated?
I'm sorry, I'm not done speaking.
Well, neither was I, but you didn't stop to interrupt me.
Now, with respect to there's clearly two different roles and two different. Powers involved and where it warrants a different analysis.
And Ms. Tang, I don't really want to get into the merits. I really just want to focus on procedurally how do I address your
okay.
motion. So I think what I understand from you is you don't have any objection to me doing some sort of response so we can move on from there.
Well, I think that my view is that the analysis of the question is the sole issue of, there are two different conflicts we're talking about, right? We have the conflict of the case conflicts, I'll call it that, and you now ascending to being the final,
presiding auditor.
Presiding officer, auditor, I forget what's that. Yep. And also the issues raised here. The first set of conflicts, that's something that should be and must be reviewed. That's just, I think, an automatic. And the second issue, if you reach that, then do you review that, or is that something that the public auditor, and I know he's conflicted, but is he conflicted from that issue? And that's sort of a tough issue, because he's really looking at a conflict and appointing anew, because that's something we talked about. If you're conflicted, you know, does it go back to the auditor? Because he appointed you to be his presiding officer. So does it go back to him to pick another presiding officer and make the decision? Just the process and not going to the merits of this.
Mm-hmm.
Whether a response is warranted, I think would need to be something, I think the policy, the auditor's office needs to decide. This is not like the Superior Court, you know. I think that this type of conflict only would have been caught on just the first ground of conflict, and you wouldn't go this far, I think, and you shouldn't have to.
The first ground being that?
Basically, you know, now that you're the final hearing officer.
Final hearing officer who handled,
private attorney
handled a court
cases.
Case.
Yeah, those cases.
In this appeal.
We think it's a game changer, being the final decision maker versus being a hearing officer. When we are working on different cases, adversaries on different cases.
You mean unrelated?
They may or may not be adversarial in that sense that we're fighting cats and dogs, but they could be. They could evolve, and that's cases are like that. I'm not saying that they are, but that's where I think, as I think about the issue, I think that's always a possibility, and I think that creates a conflict, and where you're the final decision maker. So I think normally it would have been caught there and wouldn't even reach the like I said, had there been a second round of conflicts check, we would have objected, and then I think internally it would have been discussed before it gets this far. In fact, in here, in this instance, you just came back, which is the process, the old process. But we did not expect the public auditor to accuse himself. So, at least a year ago. So anyway, at the time that we filed our objection, our non-objection to your appointment.
So I'm thinking that there needs to be some sort of response one way or the other to the issue that you raised, which is my appointment as presiding auditor.
Mm-hmm.
That way the process can move forward.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't need to be protracted at all. I mean, it can be expedited.
GDB agrees. I mean, your question is to process. They've made an objection. They're entitled
right.
to be heard.
And if I agree with it, then...
Then the next step.
Then the next step.
Okay.
I mean, what would be the alternative? I mean, there has to be
I'm not sure what you're asking, to be frank. I mean, I see it as two different issues. There's a recusal issue.
Uh-huh.
So if you recuse yourself, this issue is moot.
Right.
And you can simply say it's moot.
Right.
I think reaching it is confuses things, especially if there's no laws. And many times the Supreme Court says it's mooted, we're not going to reach it. And I think that should be what is followed here, because if you are conflicted based on just the first round, then the second issue is mooted. Then there's no need to address that.
But if I do nothing, then the process doesn't move forward. So
No. Okay, so maybe it's my misunderstanding. So you're going, my only comment is that, yes, I think that there's... A decision has to be made, whether you recuse yourself or whatnot, but in terms of having to address all of the issues raised in our objections or other issues raised in objections, that if that becomes mooted, you can simply say it's mooted. But I think if you're asking whether you have to address those on the merits, I don't think it's necessary.
The way I understand it, though, is you agree that I have the discretion to do that if I think it's appropriate.
I don't know what the rules are. We're in a different world, okay? I think that whatever decision you make should be in writing so it's clear what the decision was, or on the record or something. If you're asking me specifically whether you should be writing a response to all these the objections as to whether the various objections, other objections, raised in the second set of objections, if it's mooted, I think it's mooted. If you feel compelled to do more than that, then I'm not sure that. I don't know the answer to that, frankly, because I'm not sure you should be the one doing that.
I just want to do it right. So.
I don't know. I wish I had a clear answer for you. Should we follow the Superior Court? Should we, or should we just narrow the issue? Look, I agree with you. It needs to be done right because this is the first of, and we want to make sure that it's clean. But if it's mooted, it's been addressed. If you say it's moot, but if you get into it having recused yourself and get into it, then I'm not sure if you're recused, if you're conflicted, you shouldn't be addressing all these
issues. I could respond to your motion addressing the points and say you're right.
That's fine too, but I think I think you have to do what you feel is appropriate. I don't have a very clear there's no
it's kind of a new issue.
There's no roadmap for any of us, but I think that it needs to be addressed going forward.
Do Mr. Fisher, do you think that you should respond to it in writing, or do you just leave it to, just leave it to the I guess my discretion?
Well,
at this point?
Let's be frank. This is costing the agency money. I don't think there's much to their argument. They're just saying that for some reason, the OPA made a decision, just as every judge in Superior Court does. And based on the fact that you made a decision, now you're precluded from going forward. I mean, the facts that matter in this case are that the contract that's under protest at this point or under appeal no longer exists. Talk about moot. It was performed. It's done. We're on to a different IFB now.
But I just just mean procedurally. I mean, and I don't mean to cut you off, but it's just not helpful to me.
That's fine. I mean, there's been a lot of talk this morning over something that's actually quite small. They're entitled to be heard. You know, they've made an objection.
But do you want to respond? Do you want to respond in writing, or do you want me to, or shall I just proceed?
I'm comfortable with you proceeding. I think that, okay. I believe that you understand our position that this is, I don't know, you know, if you agree, you're agreeing that I'm conflicted as the provisional auditor or the pro tem or whatever the phrase is, which means the OPA's out.
Well, now that issues have been raised, I just think it needs to be addressed one way or the other.
Yeah.
It'd be as simple as I'm going to recuse myself because for this
because
reason.
This or that
then
or appearance.
We move on. But
whatever.
Yeah. So you don't feel no need to. Okay. So
No, I don't think there's. I don't think it's necessary to clutter up.
So then.
Record with that.
So then there. My intention is to issue an expedited response.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay. Is there anything else?
No.
And then I suppose you'll inform us of a subsequent hearing.
Right. Or where we go from there.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're off the record at 10:36.